League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
You got a stain in your t-shirt.
Sweat.
Every week.
I've just circled it.
It's like every week.
So every week I'm late and I just hammer it.
Like, and then for the first 5 minutes you're like...
So quickly.
It's not a cool one either. Like, you get a whole chest one that's kind of more...
Well, a whole more chest sweat patch. I'm quite glad I haven't got that.
It's a shame.
I tend to get quite sweaty back.
Hello and welcome to Season 2, Episode 33 of the Tottenham Way Podcast. I'm Tom and I'm your host, and with us as ever is Dan Kilpatrick.
Hello, Tom.
You all right?
I'm very well.
Other than sweaty?
I'm sweaty, yeah.
I'm going to use it as the intro, so we might as well make reference to it. You're always late.
You made me anxious by sending me sort of passive-aggressive text messages about being on time, so I hammered it on my bike and now I'm hot and sweaty.
That gives a very wrong impression of the dynamic of our relationship, because usually it's you messaging me with some sort of minor complaint or...
You texted me, you better beat me there and do the mic test, sunshine.
Do like a sunshine.
Yeah, quite passive-aggressive. Yeah,
your WhatsApp thread sounds really interesting.
Yeah. Our WhatsApp group is something to behold. The other voice you can hear is Tom Allnut. Tom, welcome back, mate. I can't remember the last pod that you were on, or your first pod that you were on, but it was a few months ago, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, maybe just before Christmas, I think.
Yeah,
when Spurs were sort of struggling a bit and not doing quite so well, I think.
Sounds about right.
So it's all transformed since then.
Oh, it's never in doubt, was it, really? You're still in the same place. You're still with it's Associated Press, is that right?
Damn.
So close. It's Press Association.
Yeah, it's the Press Association. So the Associated Press is like the American version.
And right,
it's like a big kind of global company which in general kind of talks about... like. The really big stuff in the Premier League only. Like they'll only look at like Chelsea and Arsenal and Man United and Tottenham now, you know, but not the lower stuff. The Press Association is like a British news agency, and we cover all things football and all things sport, basically.
You can see where my confusion comes in.
Yeah, you'd think that maybe the PA, or I don't know which one, I think the AP came first, so you would have thought maybe the PA might have kind of gone something a bit more original.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, definitely. It's their fault. It's absolutely their fault. Yeah, so you're still there, and you're still covering... Do you cover Spurs specifically, or are you kind of...
Yeah, I cover Spurs sort of 80%, 70% of the time, I'd say. So I'm kind of like the PA's main Tottenham man, but I also do other things as well, like Arsenal and Chelsea every so often.
So it's quite interesting. We've obviously we've had a couple of journos on over the last few weeks and throughout the season. And one of the topics that came up a couple of weeks ago with when Greg was on... was about how he kind of fell out of love with football reporting, specifically football reporting. So, I mean, it's interesting to get other people's views, because Dan, you obviously had a few counterpoints, but how do you feel about it? Do you still feel the love for it? Do you still love what you do?
Yeah, I mean, I really love it. I think sometimes you can kind of, it's so good sometimes that I think you can confuse it with like what you do normally, and that sounds a bit strange, but like you can be at a match and you can be like, oh, you know what, it's so annoying that I've got to like write something now, or it's like annoying that I've got to stay here for 2 hours after the game, etc. But it's like then you forget that actually it is a job, like you're getting paid for it, so it's not the same obviously as when you're down the pub with your mates and like, you know, when Spurs score in the last minute you go mad and it's a mate, like, great. It's obviously not that, but it is like somewhere fairly close. And the fact you get to do that as a job and you get paid for it, I think it's great. I mean, like any job, there are disadvantages, definitely. You know, like having to work on Saturdays and often Sundays and waiting around for players to turn up for things and all that kind of stuff is definitely
seems
low
like travel is quite hard. Is that, I don't know if that's the wrong impression, but I always, you know, if I go to an away game, kind of the travelling is actually one of my favourite bits of it, because you have a few beers on the train and you kind of, you go in somewhere a bit new, but for you guys that's obviously part of the job. And I think Greg said it was like you have to have a coffee and a sandwich or something like that. Is it quite arduous? Is that one of the most difficult bits?
I think like any job, a lot of it comes down to the people. And if you've got a long journey and you have to do it by yourself, like I did to Swansea, or on the train by yourself, like I've done a couple of times, it can be quite bleak and not enjoyable at all. Mm. But actually, if you manage to arrange in advance with Tom, or with, actually Tom doesn't tend to go to the long away games, but with, I don't know, Ben Pearce who's come on, or I've done a few long journeys with Greg in the past, then it's fine. It's quite fun. You just sit on the train and have a chat about football and talk about the game. And there's usually an early kickoff or something to follow. So I don't have a big problem with that side of it. And I do think it comes down to the people. I think if there tends to be quite a good group that follow Spurs, and I think it's quite enjoyable, and it makes it a lot easier if you've got people you work with who you get along with and you can work with.
Mm. I used to cover like local teams. I used to cover Watford a bit, and when they weren't kind of Watford now, and like Leighton Orient and teams like that. And like, I had to do a lot of travel at midweek, you know, travel up to like Carlisle or Accrington Stanley or something like that on Tuesday night, and just had some like horror stories of like driving for like 3 hours and you break down within like 100 metres of the stadium, and then you have to drive back. And like then it was quite tough, that kind of stuff. And Dan, you do that more than me now, because I'm pretty much London based, so I do like most of the London teams when they're at home, whereas Dan travels with Spurs a lot, so you have a bit more of that. But
yeah, but as I said, I try not to drive, try and get the train, and then it's fine.
You did miss a flight earlier in the season.
Oh, yeah, you did.
So some of it is self-inflicted, your pain.
I did. That was the worst journey I've ever done.
Was that Moscow?
No, it was Monaco. I just strolled to the gate and forgot that the EasyJet buses leave like half an hour before. And it's not actually a gate, it's just a door. And had to get in rush hour, I had to go across London from Gatwick to Heathrow. Pay about 260 quid for another flight, which I couldn't expense.
Yeah,
he arrived.
Arrived in rainy Monaco, nearly in tears. It was so bleak,
and we lost.
Yeah. And then actually, I quite enjoyed that trip, but then the sort of day, the next day before the game was quite nice, and then it just got bleak again when Spurs were terrible.
Yeah. So all right then, bit of both then. Yeah, how long have you been doing it, Tom?
At PA, I've been there for 3 and a bit years. And
okay,
before that,
so you could still call it relatively fresh to it.
Relatively fresh. But before that, I covered Watford for 2 or 3 years as well. So I guess we've been doing about 5 or 6 years total.
Okay, maybe in a few years we'll get you back if this is still going. And you may have changed your mind, but who knows? Yeah. It must be quite good to be following Spurs, even as a press at the moment, because we're amazing. And we're 4 points behind Chelsea in a title race. We need to start there, don't we? We can't start anywhere else. And we'll talk about Bournemouth, obviously, but we are in a title race now. 4 points behind Chelsea. They've just lost to Man United. Their goalkeeper's out with a basketball-related injury.
Is that right?
Apparently, he was filming an advert, apparently Courtois, and he got an injury, which I imagine Conte is fuming about.
Livid. I didn't know that.
That's the sort of thing that Poch would probably sell a player for.
Yeah.
Maybe not as important as Courtois, but yeah, I don't think it's far off. Just some little stats. They've not kept a clean sheet in, this is Chelsea, not kept a clean sheet in 10 games. Costa's not scored in 5 games. Does it feel like things are maybe falling into place for us to do it? I mean, you know, everything's pointing towards, in terms of form and stuff,
I said last week that if Chelsea beat Man U, then I thought it was done. I thought that was the last game where I was, well, if Chelsea dropped points, I'd start kind of believing.
Mm.
And I saw the Man U line up and I thought, right, that's, like, I'm not going to pretend I knew that was coming. I thought, okay, it's done. Tottenham Hotspur, it's happened again. You've been fucked by another team who doesn't want to win. But it happened. And so I'm prepared. I think they need to drop points in one more game. I think Carragher said it on Monday Night Football last night that it needs to be within a game before the pressure really starts telling. And if they drop points at Everton or whoever they've got next, I think Southampton at home.
Yeah, I mean, they've got obviously 6 games left. Mm. Their last 2 games are Watford at home and Sunderland at home. If it's going to happen, it's going to probably have to happen in the next four, isn't it?
I think it's got to get within 3 points or within 2 points, and then it's one match, and then I imagine, I've never been under pressure like that, but I imagine that's the time where every shot they face, you know, could be significant, and every cross in their box is nervy, and every kind of mistake could go down in history as the Gerrard slip, and every goal Spurs score could be the kind of Aguero moment. So that's when there's real pressure. At the moment, Chelsea still have that cushion. They still have two games where they can drop points. So yeah, last week I said it's coming down to the Man U game, and now I'm saying it's got to come down to the next time they drop
points. Yeah, but chip away.
Yeah, exactly. That's all Spurs can do.
Yeah. Tom, how do you feel about it?
I think definitely this stage of the season is where the momentum plays such a big part, you know, like, people talk a lot about the fixtures and you know, you analyse every fixture so much and you think, oh, that's definitely 3 points. But I actually think at this kind of time of the season, if you're playing well, that's worth so much more than if you're stuttering, you know. And it just sort of feels like Chelsea haven't really had any bad luck this season so far. Like, Spurs have had to deal with a lot of injuries, they've had to deal with a couple of bad patches, whereas now we suddenly, Courtois might be out possibly this weekend, you know.
Possibly Costa's,
Alonso. Yeah, Alonso.
Did you hear what that was about, by the way?
No.
Some news just came up before we started recording that they had a stomach bug from lunch or something like that.
Lasagna
so
gate.
Costa was feeling poorly. Alonso obviously didn't make the game. So, yeah, I know. What if it's the same chef? Wow. Finally working for us. You never know. But yeah, so I thought I'd just stick that in. But yeah, you're right.
I just think it's turning a little bit. But I do think the thing is that Chelsea, if they got 4 points, I think they could drop 4 points, but it would mean Tottenham still winning all their games pretty much. And I sort of feel Chelsea will lose one and they'll draw one. So I think they'll drop 5 points. But that still means Tottenham have to win all their games.
But you said there about momentum is, you know, I think I said it to you and you were like, you can't think like that. But out of our remaining six games, there are four teams who would love to be the team that finished our title hopes. And that could count for a little bit. But momentum-wise, you know, especially at home, 12 wins on the bounce at home. Or is it 13 after Bournemouth? Might be 13 now, I think, after
13,
Bournemouth.
Yeah. Oh, no, you know, 12 thing now.
12 consecutive home wins after Bournemouth.
Right, yeah, okay. Yeah. So, and we've got Arsenal, which is a game in itself, and United, which could be the last at White Hart Lane. All these factors that could come in. West Ham are in free fall. Leicester may have bigger things to be worried about if they get through their tie with Atletico tonight. Who knows? Tuesday night. And then, who's left? Hull. And Crystal Palace. And I think Crystal Palace would be another one that would, like, they'd love to do it. But
did you see Ranieri in the stands as well? And maybe they're sort of talking about possibly Ranieri at Watford possibly taking over.
Oh, really?
So how about Ranieri coming in for that game against Chelsea?
Penultimate
game of the season. And giving Tottenham the title that he owes them from last year.
Oh, yeah.
That would be spectacular.
Absolute filth. And Defoe on the last day as a Sunderland equaliser or something.
It's all set up.
It is, it could be. I mean, there's so many people out there that are just refusing to buy into it. And I get it. I totally get it. It's hard to lend yourself to a team that's hurt you so badly over the last few years. But if you can't get excited about what this season could entail, we're still in the semi-final as well, which we will come on to a bit later. But there's technically a double up for grabs for us, isn't there? There's no other way of looking at it.
And a lot of people have been saying this week it's worse now that Spurs are really good than it was when Spurs were just fighting for absolutely nothing at this time of the season.
Yeah, absolutely.
When the only thing Spurs had left was potentially messing up someone else's season, like West Ham, or potentially finishing 10th or something. I mean, that was unenjoyable, but this is kind of torturous.
How do you feel? Because it's actually a year, I think, to the day since we beat Stoke 4-0. In that incredible performance that kind of made everyone really believe that we could do this. And obviously Leicester went on to win it, but I don't know what the points difference was back then, but I think it was maybe more than what it is now. Why do I feel more optimistic about us catching Chelsea than I do about catching Leicester last year, than I did this time last year? Is there...
Well, I think because Spurs have done it once. They've been involved in the title race once, and I do think they're better for it this season. We've already got more points this season than last season.
Do you think there's less pressure on us to catch Chelsea than there ever was us catching Leicester?
I think so. It is definitely very much Chelsea's title to lose. I mean, if Spurs mess up and drop points now, then it won't be seen that way by everyone. There'll still be accusations that Spurs bottled it, even if they were never top at any point. But It does. I think it's just as Tom says, it feels like there's been a complete shift of momentum. It was 13 points mid-March. Now it's 4. So it does feel like the kind of, for once, Spurs have the mental advantage over a team, whereas in the past it's always been accusations of a weak mentality and crumbling when the pressure's on. But I still think, you know, if you listen to Pochettino in the last few weeks, he's been saying, you know, we're a lot more focused this year. We were distracted by things outside our control last season. Listen to the players, they're saying we never felt more confident. We're ruthless now. We just want more and more and more. We keep scoring goals, blah, 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 blah. But actually, the real tests are still ahead, I think. Mm. It's Chelsea in the semi-final. It's United. It's Arsenal. It's going to West Ham, going to Palace. Because actually, the run of home games has been really impressive. But you'd, before each one of those games, you still have looked at it on paper and said, Spurs favourites to win this.
Yeah.
You know, with the possible exception of kind of Chelsea. So I still think there's a lot to prove, but I think it's looking like there's been a change and an improvement from last season.
And also, I think last year, I mean, Leicester were just grinding out the results. Every one, they kind of got close to losing. They found one in the last minute, or they, I can't remember what was the game where they sort of got a decision, went their way.
West Ham,
I think. And they kind of won. And it was just the overriding feeling was that Leicester have this in there. And everyone wanted Leicester to win. And it felt like the opposition teams kind of almost wanted them to win. They're all applauding them off and everything. And it didn't really feel like there was ever going to be a time when Leicester, you know, they were about to collapse. I think the kind of the hope that Leicester would collapse was like January, February time. By the time it got to April, it was really like...
Through that run, didn't they, where everyone said, right, the wheels are coming off now. Yeah. And it was a ridiculous run of fixtures. Yeah. I can't really remember. But there was Arsenal in there, Liverpool in there. I think they had to play United.
Yeah.
And they just got through it having dropped about 2 points.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that was kind of that.
Mm.
That was the time when they were going to crumble. I think then Spurs had the chance with the Arsenal and West Ham games. Missed it.
Yeah.
And
whereas Chelsea now aren't the same Chelsea that they were 3 or 4 months ago. I think that is, everyone can see that. You know, they're conceding goals a lot more, as you said. Costa's not scoring. This isn't the same kind of ruthless Chelsea that won that 13 games in a row.
Well, that's what I was going to say as well. Like, the people were saying that for us to win, if we win our remaining 6 games, so it is unlikely, but that is what we're faced with. But that, I think, would take us to 13 consecutive wins in the league or something like that, which I think would be a record. It's either beats a record or equals a record, Premier League record.
Chelsea had 13
and then we
beat them
in January.
Yeah. They needed 14. Arsenal was the record.
So I think we would have to, we would reach 13.
So if Spurs win the next 6 and on the opening day of next season.
It's a record, yeah. Yeah, but okay. But that's it. That's what we're facing. And people are saying that in a kind of, well, that's the, you know, enormous task that we've got ahead of us. But
this team is the reason Chelsea
are top of the league.
Breaking records every week. I think the Bournemouth game, another one fell for the consecutive home wins.
Yeah, we're just adding to that now, aren't we?
Yeah, it was the first time they won seven top flight games since 1967 in a row.
Yeah, it's
it's doable. I think winning the last 6 games is doable.
Mm.
I'm actually oddly would be more concerned about the away fixtures than the 2 at home.
Well, our away form isn't anywhere. No. I mean, it wouldn't be if your home form's that good. But actually, our away form is, until Burnley and Swansea, it was quite poor, I think.
Mm,
those 2
patchy
wins really added quite a lot of oomph to those figures. But I don't know. It's just, I haven't learned a single lesson from last season. I'm going to get hurt just as badly as I did. But it does feel like we're getting there. And it feels like, Tom's saying there, Chelsea have had no bad luck. And all throughout this season, we keep saying it, but Lloris has had injuries. Rose has been out for a ridiculous amount of time, really. Alderweireld was out. Vertonghen's been out. Kane's been out twice. Well, Ali didn't start hitting form until December sort of time. Eriksen the same as well. I mean, I guess that's not bad luck, but the injury certainly is. So it just feels like for us to even be 4 points behind and in touch, and for people to be saying, actually, we need to start taking these guys seriously, because in another week's time, it could all be completely blown open. I think it's remarkable for us to even be there.
And I mean, it kind of went unnoticed at the weekend that Spurs got 71 points now, right? Which is obviously more than last season. And I usually think that 70 is about the kind of par for getting Champions League. Normally, there have been sort of exceptions either side, but that's a kind of around about the mark. And it looks now, like that pretty much is secure. So, I mean, it's kind of gone unnoticed that they've now got Champions League football pretty much like for 2 years in a row, which is a massive achievement when you consider the clubs that they're going up against in that top five, top six, for them to have been able to do that. With the amount of money they've spent and had to sell players, you know, the last few seasons, you know, hats off to Pochettino, because I think if you said at the beginning of the season you're going to finish second or third, and you know, you're going to get in the Champions League again, another title challenge, you know, people would have been really impressed with that. So I don't think that should go forgotten.
I mean, the other day after Lamella's surgery, I revisited the ESPN's season predictions for the Premier League, because I put Lamella as player of the year, so I just said good time to remember this. And I had it, and it was quite sort of funny looking back over them, and I've got to say everyone took it seriously apart from me, which wasn't very good. I thought everyone was, well, the club correspondents might be a bit tongue-in-cheek about it, but they were not.
All right.
Okay. So I had Spurs to win the league,
which wasn't particularly silly,
but you know, everyone at ESPN knows what they're doing, and they've got some of the best football writers in the country, but not many people had Spurs in the top four. And that's kind of funny just to look back now.
Wow, okay.
If you think about it, in the summer, hadn't really bought that spectacularly. Everyone considered last season to be a complete anomaly. You know, that it was kind of widely accepted that Leicester was an anomaly. And I think, you know, if you accept that the first place team is out of place, then why shouldn't the second play, or in the end the third place team be out of place? So I think at the beginning of the year a lot of Spurs fans would have taken fourth.
I think it's easy to rewrite history now.
Guardiola, Mourinho, it's easy. Everyone sort of felt they were both going to be right at the top. It's going to be Manchester versus Manchester at the top. You know,
and it's easy to rewrite history and say, oh no, you know, we knew we'd build on last year. But I don't think it was looked that way by many Spurs fans and by many journalists and pundits. So
okay,
it is remarkable.
I'm keen to move on, because we've got the semi-finals to talk about, but we should talk about why we are even discussing thoughts of the title. We obviously beat Bournemouth in the early kickoff on Saturday. Just sort of picking out some points of note, it's that we've now scored four or more goals in a quarter of Premier League games that we've played this season. Don't know if it originated from him, but Ollie Lister actually tweeted that. So if Ollie did compile that stat, hats off. Congratulations to Wally Lister there.
Well done, mate.
Yeah, that's well done.
Brilliant stat.
Dan was saying that around the mix zone after the match, as if it was his own stat. You know.
Oh like, yeah, I
he
see.
Wasn't
I've actually been rumbled there.
Sorry. I'm not sorry. He's got more important things to worry about now.
He does. We haven't mentioned a shout out to his baby.
Ollie Lister, obviously, is a regular on the pod, and Rosa, who's been on at least three times, I think. They had little baby Talia, didn't they?
They did.
About a month ago, actually.
On my birthday.
We've neglected. Oh, it was on your birthday, wasn't it?
Yeah. I did say it should have been called Danielle.
Tottenham Way. Danielle, yeah. Oh, yeah, the Tottenham Way is the middle name, but I understand. They might be lying to us.
They ignored me.
Well.
Rude.
Yeah, he's a bit. But yeah, belated congratulations. But it also should be mentioned that we are not just unbeaten since she's been born. I think we've won every game since little Talia was born. So
she's a blessing.
She is absolutely a blessing.
I think Talia might never know the Tottenham that, you know, didn't qualify for the Champions League.
Oh,
you know?
God, yeah. The new generation could have started.
She'll be called a glorious
empire begins.
Yeah.
Begins now.
The dynasty. Moving on.
Poch has said he wants kind of 26 years of domination like Fergie. He's referenced that several times.
Wow.
So, you know, Talia could be roughly our age and I've known nothing but title wins, Champions League glory.
Yeah, then Pochettino goes and we have 4 years of just awful football and
Sherwood. 70-year-old Sherwood.
Yeah, back from the dead.
He recommends some washed up Argentinian midfielder to replace him.
Yeah.
And it all goes tits up.
Speaking of which, how is Lamella?
I don't know, but I did see his car. I'm not completely sure he was in it, but he seemed to be at the training ground the other week.
Okay.
Well, it had Coco number plate.
Right.
So, I mean, I was 90% sure it was his car.
Okay.
And he was probably in it. So he's around, but I can't see how he is.
Yeah, doing some mascotting. Dembele's first league goal of the season, his first since Sunderland at home last season, in the 4-1 game when we smashed him at White Hart Lane. a bit of a sort of a topic that's come up from his goal, and it's come up previous as well from sort of people that maybe don't understand why he's getting in the team ahead of certain players. Like Winks was, well, people were talking about Winks starting and saying that they feel like he's more of a goal threat. He goes forward a bit more, but Dembele's playing in an 11 that is on a plus 46 goal difference, has got goal scorers pretty much all over the pitch. He doesn't need to score goals, does he?
No, he doesn't. Some people still say it, that he should be scoring and assisting more. I think Jamie Redknapp said it, because I saw that on Twitter.
But is that born from... He's got ability. He was a goal scorer at AZ as
I think
well.
It's born from the fact that people make this argument that if you can dribble past someone in the centre circle, then you can do it on the edge of the box. Don't they?
I
think that is born from that. So yeah. They feel like if he's got this skill set and he's using it in a position that's not particularly dangerous to the opposition, so they say, and he should be using it higher up the pitch. I don't think it really works like that. And I think Dembele is still such an important part of the team. And there's really no one. I mean, I think Winks has had a really good season, but there's still no one almost in the Premier League I can think of that can do what Dembele can do.
Mm.
And he's so important for Tottenham.
I think he should score more. I think he should assist more as well.
Oh, okay.
I think that for someone who's got his creative talents, I think it's a psychological thing. I think it's a mindset thing that you have to actually go out on the pitch and almost break a habit where, like, if you play every week and you're happy not scoring and not assisting and everyone else is doing it in the team, then you just kind of get used to that, I think. And I think he needs to take more responsibility. I think, yeah, he needs to, like, Dembele's a great player. Like, no one's doubting that he's been, like, one of Tottenham's best players this season. But I think he could do more. And, like, if we're talking about Dembele becoming sort of one of the, you know, the top five central midfielders in Europe, that kind of area that, you know, he probably could get into, then I think he needs to affect games more himself, like, in terms of...
He's kind of on record, I think, saying that one of the reasons he doesn't shoot is because he used to play football with no goals. He's like a street footballer, and they used to have to dribble around. And I'm
That's
serious.
An amazing
I'm serious.
Story.
Have you heard that?
Yeah.
Like, he used to play street football, and to score,
Did
you had to kind
do
of
the
dribble.
Same thing?
it's a known game in Belgium. So he used to dribble around a cone or something. So he's like, I never used to shoot. So maybe it is a psychological thing. I think what you said at the beginning, I understand what Tom's saying, but it's just not really his job in the team. I mean, you'd never say that one of the defenders needed to score more. You might say that Rose or Walker, and I appreciate that Dembele does a bit of both, but I think he's not there to score or even assist.
But it's not his job at the moment because they're playing so well. But like, if you go back to kind of September, October, November time when they were scoring like 0.5 goals per game for about 2 months because Kane was out, you know, and Ali wasn't playing as well as he is now.
Tom's phone's just gone off.
Continue.
When Ali wasn't, you know, that's when you need someone like Dembele to be scoring goals. Yeah, I don't think you can assume that you're always going to have the luxury of all the attacking players playing brilliantly, scoring 4 goals a game. There are going to be times when you need your player. I'm not saying he should score 10, 15 goals a season, sure, but I think he can chip in with 5 or 6 and getting one in 2 years, I think. And particularly if you're playing with Wanyama in midfield, you know, it's not as if you're playing with a player who you have to cover every so often and it's kind of give and go. You're basically playing with an out-and-out defensive midfielder who should give you a bit more licence, I think.
I thought it was unusual to see him score from where he did.
I mean, he actually had a sighter, didn't he?
Yeah, from his right foot as well.
Tested. Yeah, I think Tom makes a good point. I think the thing with Dembele is he went through a period, I think, at the beginning of last season where Poch put him in the front three for the first game against Man U.
Oh, yeah, he was on the wing.
He was on the wing. And then he moved back into midfield.
When I wanted to sell him to Sunderland.
Yeah.
Is that right?
And
God, yeah, I wanted him so far gone. I would have driven him myself.
In fact, no, it wasn't that period. Sorry, it was in Poch's first season when he played. He had that run in the front three. And then he was dropped after he made a mistake against West Ham. And there was a lot of kind of talk about he can add more goals to his game. And it was kind of the right sort of talk, the right stuff that you want to hear, but it feels like it's just not going to happen for him. And I appreciate what Tom's saying, but I don't really blame him for it. I don't think it's his job.
He's not a passenger by any means in the team.
No, he does.
We're not carrying him for the sake of...
And to be fair to him, he's often the guy who like assists the assist. You know, like he might not be the person on the edge of the box who plays a little cute ball inside, but he is usually the guy who's won the ball, you know, a couple of passes before and then played that pass.
I mean, people used to level the same thing at Modric.
Yeah.
Say, oh, he needs to score goals or he needs to even assist more goals. And he was by far the most important player in that team.
And in a team with no...
And people didn't really realise it until he was gone.
Yeah, we don't have a lot of pace in our team. So to turn an opposition is very difficult. And I think Dembele is one of the only players in our team who can do that. He can get on the edge of his own box or be facing his own goal around about halfway into his own half and turn a team, and that's when we gain 10-20 yards. And Modric used to do that, and Bale used to do it, obviously, with a bit of pace. But I don't think like we've had that for a little while, and I do think Dembele provides that. But
I mean, final thing I'll say is that actually Dier kind of stepped up when Kane was out of the team. I said it last week. He scored twice in, what, three games. And I suppose... To follow on from Tom's point, it would be nice if Dembele had more of those little spells, you know, where if he could score another one before the end of the season, you know, it would sort of be encouraging that this isn't a complete one-off.
Yeah, fair enough. Some more stats that came after the game. Kane's obviously hit his 20th league goal, third straight season. Ruud van Nistelrooy, Alan Shearer and Thierry Henry are the only others that have done the same. He's now on the same amount of goals as Suarez was after the same amount of appearances, so 69 in 110. World-class company for a world-class striker. Agreed?
Yeah.
Reaction? Oh, this is something that I thought was quite interesting. So, Wilshere's injury, there was quite a lot of... Particularly on Twitter, I actually think you tweeted, didn't you, that it was unsavoury? Was that what you used?
I said it was just a bit of a low point for the afternoon.
A low point,
yeah. Which I kind of wish I didn't, because then I had a lot of.
There was a lot of backlash to
Ben Pierce got a death threat.
Did he?
Someone said, "I hope you die."
That's not funny.
I was told to move out of London. Someone said if I didn't understand the rivalry, then I didn't deserve.
Someone told you
to
stick to tennis, which I thought was actually quite decent advice.
Yeah, go back to the champagne and short strawberries. Yeah,
I do like that. That's advice as well. That's like death threats. That's nasty, and there's a line. But someone's like, that's really specific. Yeah. Move out of London, please.
See, as a tremendously impartial reporter, I just tweeted the chant and didn't.
You did, didn't you? I noticed you were so careful with that. Well, so then let's
didn't say either way.
I
don't want to talk about it.
Can I then, as a fan?
No, I'll tell you my view. Didn't have a huge problem with it.
He didn't break his leg. He didn't go off with oxygen.
But I kind of know that I'm wrong, if that makes sense.
Yeah. But that's why it was funny.
Jack Wilshere...
Because it was so
Jack
nasty.
Wilshere has given it out. You know, he's literally on camera... singing about how much he hates Tottenham and saying they're shit.
Yeah.
And if you've kind of been that gobby, then I don't think you... It's a little bit... as Tom says, it's a bit unsavoury that's what we expect from football fans, and that's unsurprising, but I think if you've done that, you've got to... If you dish it out, you've got to take it. Really, that was my view.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I don't disagree with that. I don't think Wilshere's walking off thinking, "Oh, like Tottenham fans, like how cruel are they?" Like, you know, he understands. I'm sure that he kind of deserved it. I understand that. I just felt a bit like awkward, the idea of a guy like being on the ground like with an injury, particularly with Wilshere's kind of history, like an England midfielder, and like a whole stadium pretty much like on their feet cheering and like.
Yeah,
it's
quite gladiatorial.
Like when you were just sitting there in the stadium, I just felt a bit like that's a bit weird. Like, I'm not saying it's offensive. I'm not saying like it's a problem. It really probably didn't deserve the you know day's worth of coverage that it got. But I just felt a bit awkward about it.
I mean, I think the other argument is the fact that you know I suppose most of those fans might be you know kind of England supporters, and Jack Wilshere, promising English player, or at least he certainly was. And can you imagine if kind of Kane went to Arsenal before?
They would absolutely cheer
before the Euros or whatever, and got a serious injury.
Mm.
they would absolutely cheer it. I agree, but all the Spurs fans would be absolutely up in arms about it, saying, "Oh, how can you do that? You know, he's England's main striker."
It's just partisan, isn't it?
Yeah, it is partisan. I don't know what goes on in kind of other countries, but I can't imagine that happening anywhere else.
I don't know.
I'm not sure.
No frame of reference on that. But yeah, interesting.
I really don't think it was much of an issue. It was probably worth a tweet, and that was about it.
Yeah.
I can understand. Spurs fans have taken a lot from Wilshere, and therefore...
Yeah,
it works both ways, I guess.
Ha! No, sorry. And Janssen got his first goal from open play. That first shot was going wide, wasn't it?
Yeah.
A long way wide.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Just wanted to clear that up because I thought my eyes were deceiving me. But it's still quite nice. And he could be quite vital in the coming games. I'm not saying he's going to take Kane's place. I'm not saying he's going to score even as many as him. But it's nice to have a striker on the bench that has a couple of goals in his last few games. Could come on and do something. Just if you need to go two up top, we need to win a game, we're in a title race. If we're 1-1 at West Ham, I'd bring Janssen on.
And it might keep him with the club as well, you know. If he can chip in two or three goals now, between now and the summer, it might persuade Pochettino and Levy that here's a guy, maybe he should be given another season. If he went right through to May without scoring an open play goal in the Premier League, then they might thought that this is a dead rubber, like this. Let's take a, cut our losses. So it might give him another year even as well.
Yep, who knows. Let's get on to, I want to talk about the semi-final because I am excited. Are you excited, Dan?
Yeah.
Are you both going, presumably?
Yeah.
Yes.
Press access?
Yeah.
Is this one of those games then, Dan, that you would really wish you were in, like the Spurs end?
Yeah.
So underwhelming.
I enjoy going. Like Tom said at the start, I enjoy going and doing my job. It's quite fun.
But and actually, I won't final against Chelsea.
I know, but I think I still get to be there. I still get to have a really, really good seat. I think I'll have very little to do actually because Liam's going. Mm-hmm. He'll come on the pod after the game to talk about
hopefully.
It. It could be unbearable actually if Spurs lose.
He's been all right.
He's all right, but just having a Chelsea fan in proximity.
Oh, it's going to be unbearable full stop if we lose, so it doesn't matter who's on the pod.
Yes, yeah, so I think Liam's going, and I think Mark Ogden will be going, so I don't imagine, I think I'll be sort of on...
Get down there, Dan.
...post-match quotes or sort of whatever, so it'll be quite relaxed, and I'll just be able to enjoy the game when it's on.
All right, fair enough.
Yeah, so, yeah, no issues either way.
Yeah. Well, how do you feel about this, the fact that it is the cup game, and with all of this kind of battle in the background of the league, is this the worst time for us to have like a huge cup semi-final? Would you rather, as a Spurs fan or imagining what it's like to be a Spurs player, would you rather be kind of sticking to the meat and drink of the Premier League and trying to eat away at that lead, or is this a bit of a distraction or a good distraction? Maybe
I think if you're Chelsea right now, the last team you want to play is Tottenham. Like, so I mean, they must be thinking, we would love to be playing a league game next week at home where we can just kind of put to bed this idea that we're slipping up and collapsing. You know, the last team they want to play is the team who's won 7 games on the bounce, you know, like, and they're absolutely flying at the moment. Because if Tottenham go and win that game, I do think there is a psychological boost to it. You know, it definitely will say this whole thing about Tottenham being the best team in the country right now, it will definitely confirm that at the moment. And I do think it will have an effect in the next couple of weeks. So... yeah, I think Tottenham will definitely go into it as slight favourites for me, and I think it's perfectly set up. I think the way that Tottenham have been playing, the fact that Chelsea are 4 points clear in the league and have been the best team over the course of the season, I think it's perfectly poised.
Do you think it's that significant, the result in terms of the league, not just knocking someone out of the cup, but do you think it would have significant ramifications for the league?
It's difficult to say that, but I think for Chelsea, if they beat Tottenham on Saturday, I think that goes a long way to saying we're still the Chelsea that we were 2 or 3 months ago. You know, if they beat Spurs at Wembley, you know, in any way, I think, you know, it kind of puts to bed the idea this is a team on the rocks. If they don't win, then I think it continues that narrative that Tottenham are on the up and that Chelsea are on the way down. And I think it sends Chelsea into that Southampton, is it? That Southampton game with a lot of pressure.
Downward spiral, as AVB would say, and be wrong about. How do you feel about it, Dan?
Yeah, I think Tom's right. And then, but also just from a Spurs perspective, I think, as I said earlier, I think they still haven't quite put to bed this idea that they bottle it in the biggest games or the biggest moments, because there's still enough evidence against the top six last season and this season to suggest that that's still...
And at Wembley as well.
At Wembley. So they're still... I think it will be significant psychologically, but just from a Spurs point of view, there's still quite a lot of psychological barriers I think they need to overcome. And I think winning against Chelsea would go a long way to kind of putting them to bed, and it would just give them even more belief going into the final six games. I think at the moment Spurs feel unstoppable, but in the seven game run, they haven't played a top six team, and the last top six team they played is still Liverpool, who beat Spurs comfortably at Anfield. So I still think there's something to prove for Tottenham, and I think if they, as Tom says, if they could win that, it would be psychologically big in the title race, but also not just in the sense that it damages Chelsea, in the sense that it gives even more belief to Spurs.
Yeah, fair enough. In terms of the game itself, what would you do? How do you line up? Because the big debate at the moment is obviously matching the man for man, which we did in the victory at White Hart Lane in January, which worked perfectly. You know, Wanyama and Dembele versus Kante and Matic worked as well as it possibly could have. And Ali, that's the first time you really saw Eriksen, Ali and Kane kind of just ripping teams to shreds, because they had no responsibility other than just to get in between the space and start winning the ball. But Son is on fire, isn't he? What do you do? It's going to be so harsh to drop Son. Could you tell his little face? I couldn't.
I'd drop Son.
I would as well. I'd get Son. Jesus Perez to tell him.
Yeah, Jesus is good at that.
Jesus Perez.
He'd show him on the iPad or whatever. I think Wanyama's got to play.
And Davis left wing back, obviously.
Well, unless Rose is fit. I don't think he will be. No. Almost certainly won't be, but Poch didn't rule it out, did he?
There was an Instagram thing this afternoon as well. Dembele did an Instagram thing, and they said, or somebody said something about Rose's on his way back.
I think he's training outdoors now, but I don't think he'll be able to play.
Touching the grass.
He's training this week, and I think it would be in Tottenham's interest to suggest that he might play, because they would probably not want Chelsea to come up with some great plan to attack Davis down the right. So
yeah,
it wouldn't surprise me. But, if Pochettino on Thursday says, oh, we'll assess him, you know, he's got a chance.
The thought of him playing on Wembley's massive pitch, that kind of high intensity fullback position, seems quite outlandish.
And a game in 3 days as well.
Yeah, when he hasn't played.
And the North London Derby coming up.
Since February.
January, I think.
Was it January?
I think you are.
So
right,
I'd be surprised. I would categorically drop Son, and what a great sub to have. Is there you know, more of a form substitute in the whole Premier League? No, it'd be great to be able to bring him on, even if Spurs are up, just to give Chelsea something else to worry about.
Yeah,
I'd play Son.
Ooh, but for who?
I think you have to, like, he's just in such good form, and if we think that the advantage that Tottenham have is that they're in great form, then how can you not play the team that they are in form with? Like, if you, like, the idea that you play the team that beat Chelsea, understand the system worked really well in January, but that was in January. Like, there was, you know, 4 months ago. It's a different time of the season now. Tottenham have to believe that they can beat Chelsea on their own terms with the team they play with in the last 4, 5, 6, 7 games, and against the team that Chelsea have been in the last 4, 5, 6, 7 games. And Son has been a big part of that, you know, and dropping a guy who scored 8 goals in 6 games doesn't make sense to me. Like, I just think he's on great form on the Wembley pitch. He can run, he can harry people, and I think he deserves to be
both. For Dier then?
No, I'd keep the same team.
No Big Vic?
I'd probably have Dier and Dembele.
I guess you've always got the option to drop Dier back. I think as well, I was going to ask you guys about the game at Old Trafford. Did it set any sort of blueprint of how to stop Chelsea, in particular Hazard? Because Herrera obviously followed him all day, or for the entire game, wasn't further than 2 foot away from him, it seems.
I doubt Poch would do that.
Wonder if Dier might be the man to do it, though.
Spare I don't think man, Poch yeah. would ever do that. He's more, actually sort of backs up Tom's point, but he's sort of more about his own players and the way his own team's playing and his own philosophy, I think, than kind of stopping, than jeopardising that by stopping a specific player for the opposition.
Fair enough.
I think. But, I mean, no, I stick to my guns. I would put Son on the bench, as harsh as that is, and play the same way. I think a big part of beating Chelsea is to kind of stop them being able to dominate the middle of the pitch, and that's what Mourinho did quite well.
Yeah,
sort of clogging it up with Herrera and Fellaini, and I think having Wanyama in there with Dembele, and then the three centre backs will go a long way to do that. But I wouldn't be unhappy, you know.
No, it's worse.
It's good to have options, isn't it?
It's not like we've got a pick between Sissoko or Janssen. But then I think you're right though. What to come off if you have a bench? Son is almost our entire bench in a way, in terms of game changing. If he starts on the bench, and we're 1-0 down, you can change it. You can be like, right, we bring on Son. If you're 1-0 down with Son on the pitch, I do wonder what.
Yeah, but you could be 1-0 up with Son on the pitch as well. You'd have to assume that you're going to be losing, and therefore you need the sub. Like, start with the team that you think. And I also wonder with Wanyama, like, how sharp is it? He's missed what, 3 games, 4 games now.
He came on,
played 3 and come on in the last one. Or missed 3 and come on the last one. So I mean, we don't know how sharp or how unfit he has been, but throwing a guy straight back into a semi having not played for 2 or 3 weeks, there's a slight risk in that as well.
Speaking of which. Is Vorm injured? And I use inverted commas because he was guaranteed a place, pretty much, wasn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, I jokingly made the suggestion. That's why I've said that. So I don't expect any of you to add any sort of speculation on it. But I think it's very mysterious. I think it's since the semi-final has become a lot more important.
Well, you think Tottenham injured him?
No, I feel like this might be one of those where. You know those people that kind of break a toe or break a bone but don't realise it's happened?
Yeah.
And we may have just told him that it's like, yeah, you broke your finger, mate. And then just bring out an x-ray and say, yeah, that line
it's a knee injury.
Means you've... All right.
Like, yeah. My hand feels fine.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying.
I'll agree that it's quite convenient for Pochettino because he was put on the spot, wasn't he, a few weeks ago. When he definitely wasn't expecting to be asked about goalkeepers in the semi-final. It was before a random league game. And he committed to Vorm playing.
Mm.
And
yeah, he pretty much said, you know, yeah, he's played all the games, he's a great goalkeeper, so I trust him. You know?
Yeah, so I think he's probably quite relieved, but I also think it's a real injury.
Okay, fair. Yeah, that's very,
but who knows?
Very diplomatically done.
Well, no, if Lloris picks up a basketball injury... Then on the weekend,
can we not? Let's not. Do you think we can do it? Obviously, but totally different question. Will we do it? Is this it? Is this our time to break the Wembley hoodoo, break the Chelsea hoodoo? You know, step up, be the big game team that we have promised, or supposedly promised that we can be.
I feel like a team talk.
Yeah, come on.
Amazing.
Emotional.
I think they'll win, yeah. I think they will win. I just feel like the tide is with Tottenham at the moment. They've got, they haven't got the injury problems or illness problems that Chelsea have got, apart from Rose. And I think that they just have the momentum with them. And I think they'll win. I don't necessarily think that means they're going to win the title, but I think they will get to the FA Cup final.
Dan?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Ben Davis worries me a bit. He always
does. Yeah, but he's worried us for a few weeks, and every so often he does
just
pull out those.
Josh King kind of skips inside him, as Carl Norton had done a few weeks ago.
Yeah, that's quite damning, I suppose, isn't it? Yeah.
But no, I think I think Spurs are slight favourites.
Fair enough. We'll do a couple of listener questions towards the end. Jack sent us one just before we started recording. If you could swap. I think he said if you could win the title, but it would guarantee another like 20 years or a lifetime of Spurs in the 90s, would you do it? No, it was actually, he asked, would you win the double if it meant a lifetime of how we were in the 90s afterwards?
No.
Really?
Yeah, no.
I think I'd be tempted.
Well, you take one title for a lifetime of mediocrity.
We were talking about a 5 minutes ago about building a dynasty of 26 years.
Well, there's, it might not
You're
happen.
Mad.
Yeah, I am, but I'm so success
you're so desperate.
So hungry.
Take anything.
Yeah.
I think this team needs to win a trophy, but then as soon as they do, they'll be looking at winning more.
Mm. Yeah. It's a bit like, well, Chelsea and City, after the money, both had to win the FA Cup first, I think. Or they both won the FA Cup as their first trophy after all the money sort of piled in. And I think they all identified that as fairly winnable trophy and one to get the ball rolling, if you like. And after that comes league titles and stuff. So, yeah, maybe. But I don't know, I'd be so tempted if it was offered to me. I'm so success starved. I am. I'm pathetic and weak, but I need something to hold on to. Is there any correlation between Spurs closing the gap at the top and the increased threat of thermonuclear war? That's a question from me, actually.
Oh, for me.
I mean, it sounds ridiculous, but
yeah,
it's hard to argue with the evidence so far.
I mean, that's the kind of in vogue tweet right now, isn't it?
That, seems like it.
That Spurs are going to win the title, the nukes are going to hit, and we'll never know.
Yeah.
All the work on the new stadium would just be down the drain as well.
Annoying. Levy would be furious, actually. There's a load of money that he could have kept in his pocket. Yeah.
He'd invest in Rocket, make it all back.
Yeah, true, yeah.
Is there any correlation between Spurs? I'm not sure at this point.
Mm.
I don't think so.
If it gets to one point and like fingers on the button, then we know it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, the correlation is positive as it stands. The evidence is positive. So we have to, I think, wait for the next couple of weeks, see how the evidence stacks up, and then if it continues in this direction, then we can maybe discuss it further.
Don't win a title, we've saved the world. So Spursy, isn't it? Not there's been any prior evidence. Yeah. We had a last question. Would you swap Daniel Adams on Twitter at DAdams_93. Would you swap Wanyama for a young, injury-free Sandro?
Ooh.
Nice one to finish up
with.
That's
a good question.
I think Sandro would probably play the same role as what Wanyama is in this
pretty
team.
Pretty similar players, with really, aren't they?
Yeah. Consider how good they were with Dembele before the injury as well.
I would take Sandro, actually. I just think he was so good, and when he was
that season that with Dembele as well,
he was as good as banger I've seen. Of a shot on him as well.
Yeah, he could score a screamer. Yeah, he was a bit more of a goal threat than Wanyama.
Mm. Do love Big Vic, but
I like Big Vic. Had a good chat with his brother this week.
Should mention this. Yeah, you spoke.
Yeah,
to
I'll
his,
plug it.
His
I did brother. An interview with his brother. He's one of the nicest people I've ever spoken to. He's so sweet. So I think Big Vic's probably similar. I would probably swap him for an injury-free Sandro. So yeah, Sandro had that half season with Dembele, and it was a bit like sort of Dier when Dier got together with Dembele last year, and it just looked like a partnership that had a little bit of everything.
Mm.
It was so good. So yeah, I probably would do it.
Think Wanyama's in there for player of the season with Spurs, or
for Spurs only. Yeah, I think he's been the only one that's been
fit. Well, you wouldn't have him in your semi-final team.
I was asking the question. putting it forward.
I think he was, but if Pochettino takes your very bad advice and doesn't put him back in the team for the final six games, I think it would be difficult for him to win it.
I think it's amazing we've got about six candidates.
We've got about nine candidates.
I would say, seriously, though.
No one mentions Kyle Walker.
Yeah, Walker definitely.
Lloris?
Vertonghen.
Lloris is the only player who did anything in the Champions League was Lloris.
Yep, fair. Lloris, Vertonghen definitely.
Vertonghen definitely.
Toby would be there if he probably didn't have the injury, but I don't think he's been as good as Vertonghen this season. Not enough to win player of the season.
Rowe's probably injured a bit too much. Mm.
Wanyama's been around Dembele, since the start.
Quietly brilliant. Wanyama, kind of consistently impressive.
Ali, Kane is Kane, but Eriksen is up there at the moment.
It's difficult to call.
It is.
Good question.
It's tricky because a lot of those players have kind of done well in different times across the season. Yeah. Eriksen has been great for the last two or three months. Ali, similar, but both were fairly ordinary for the first half of the season.
Mm. Yeah, that's being kind.
I think Wanyama was the only player whose level started high and didn't really drop until his injury.
Mm. Yeah, he's probably been the most consistent.
Vertonghen as well, but he had the injury. So, yeah, that's difficult to call.
Yeah, that's a tough one. But it's amazing, just nice to be in the position other than obviously Bale.
Yeah.
Obviously Berbatov. So, yeah, no, nice position to be in. Just quickly, what was the Wanyama article to Wanyama's brother?
This is an interview with his brother.
What's his name?
McDonald Mariga.
That's it. Yeah, and he was at Inter during the
Champions League. He won the Champions League under Mourinho at Inter, and now he's at Latina, who are bottom of the Serie B. And I haven't paid him since November because they're bankrupt.
Mm.
But he was very relaxed about it. He just said he had a really bad knee injury, unfortunately. And I said, what's next for you? And he just said, this didn't go in the interview, unfortunately, because I just didn't have enough space. But he just said, oh, you know, hopefully get back to where I am. But if I can't, then I'll just keep playing here for another 5 or 6 years. I was like, what, not being paid? And he was like, well, yeah, I'm all right with it. This is really chilled.
It was a really good interview, actually. I enjoyed reading it. He's quite a journeyman, yes, isn't he? But it's all in there. It's really interesting.
He went to Europe and then kind of brought Wanyama with him when Wanyama was just 14. And then afterwards, I think Wanyama really kind of looked up to him and pretty much said, like, every time he's had a decision to make on where to move, which club to move to, he's called him up. Mm. They speak every day, so he's called him up before he went to Celtic and was like, I'm going to join Celtic, what do you think of this? And he's like, yeah, very good, join Celtic. I think he called him up before Southampton, and again, this didn't go in, but Mariga was nearly joined City and nearly joined Portsmouth, but both times he couldn't get a work permit. So when Wanyama called him up to say he was joining Southampton, he was kind of half really pleased for him, but half like, pissed off. Like, how have you managed to do that? How have you got a work permit? And he said, oh, it's changed now. Kenya are a bit better, so we've managed to get it.
Yeah.
So
it's really good. Check it out. It's on ESPN.
Yeah, it's on ESPN.
Yeah, really good stuff. We do need to wind this up. So Dan, thanks very much for coming down.
Cheers, mate.
Great to have you again. Thank you very much for taking the time to come down.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
And we'll probably see you again next season. See you next week when we'll have
Liam. Yeah, Liam. For Chelsea review.
Ooh. Yeah.
And a Palace preview.
And a North London derby preview as well. So it's all happening. All getting a bit busy. Enjoy your week. Enjoy the semi-final. And we'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.